Hello. Welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. The first LQ update I have for you is our conference updates. Looks like due to some last-minute issues that have come up, I will not be attending eTech next week as I had planned on. If I had plans to meet you there, I'll be contacting you, but if for anyone that was looking to try to find me during the show, I unfortunately, like I said, will not be there. I'll still be hitting SD the week after that, though. While it's unfortunate that I'll miss eTech for the second year in a row now, I do have some good news. It looks like space may have opened up at the upcoming Linux World Expo in Boston. I should have written confirmation today, but things do look good as it stands now. As soon as I do find out about that, I'll let everyone know, and I do look forward to being able to once again exhibit at Linux World. Also on the conference note, I do hope to attend the Desktop Linux Summit and probably the MySQL User Conference both in April and potentially Linux World Canada too. March and April seem to be pretty busy as far as conferences go. Next LQ update, if you haven't already voted in the 2005 LinuxQuestions.org Members' Choice Awards yet, you only have a couple days left to do so. We've already gotten a significant amount of votes and definitely another record this year set as far as number of votes cast. But don't miss out on your chance to make your opinions known. Voting will close, as I've mentioned before, I think March 6th, so you only have 4 days left. Here at LQ, we realize that really it's our members that make us what we are. Your feedback is absolutely critical to our success. So on that note, we'd like to hear any suggestions you may have for us. Things like if you're looking for certain functionality that you can't find, or if you think there's a whole area where LQ could fill a niche that's not currently filled. If you have a suggestion you think we could use, if you think you've discovered a bug, if you have a way that you think we could be doing something better, or if you just have a comment that you think we could benefit from, we want to know about it. Now, I've created a thread in the website suggestions and feedback forum, so please feel free to post anything you might have in that thread. If you're just listening to the podcast and aren't actually a member of LQ, but you'd like to see something in regards to LQ Radio or the podcast, feel free to either send me an audio comment or post something to the LQ Radio site. We really do appreciate the feedback, and I assure you that we do listen. The Zero Reply search functionality has been significantly improved in the last couple of days. So if you haven't used it or had stopped using it because of you didn't like how the new functionality worked, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised if you try it again. Now, also on the Zero Reply topic, I'm happy to announce that the Zero Reply email functionality that we had temporarily suspended after the LQ upgrade is now back. If you were previously subscribed to the Zero Reply email, you'll just start getting it again. You don't have to do anything. If you want to subscribe to it now, simply go to the User Control Panel, click Edit Options, and then look in the Messaging and Notifications section. It's right by the subscription for the Community Bulletin. Lastly, on the LQ updates, I wanted to let everyone know that some content has now been posted to the LQ Articles and Editorial section. Now, this is one of the new sections that we had after we upgraded the site. Now, Ray has been doing an absolutely fantastic job as the LQ editor, and we'd like to thank everyone who has contributed content. We have much more on the way for this section, so do stay tuned there. If you are interested in contributing content, please contact us. LQ is a fantastic way to gain exposure, not only for you, but for your writing. Now on to the news. It's been kind of a hectic week for me, so this is going to be a fairly short podcast, and I'm only going to cover two news stories. I'll cover a couple extra ones next week to make up for it. The first story I have is MySQL makes an acquisition. So this is a bit more in a continuation on a topic that I've covered quite a bit previously on the podcast over the last month or so. The more I think about it, the more I think that it's quite possible that SAP is really the intended target of the Oracle MySQL acquisition rumors. Now, why is that? You just have to look at the money involved. It's true that MySQL is a profitable company, but the numbers involved in the MySQL balance sheet are nothing when you compare them to the numbers that you're talking about SAP and Oracle. So just from a numbers perspective, look for the bigger number, and I think that bigger number clearly lies on the SAP side. Now, with PeopleSoft and JD Edwards already absorbed, SAP is really the only competition Oracle has at the upper end of the CRM market, and it's a place where SAP is far and away the leader. And that's a position that Oracle, I don't think, sees to being in there. By recently partnering with SAP with the MaxDB product, MySQL may very well have painted a bullseye on their chest. And SAP really is looking to become a platform where you don't need Oracle. As it stands now, I don't know the exact numbers, and I'll admit to not in any way being up on the SAP or even really the high-end CRM market. It's just not an area that I'm in too much. I did do a little bit of research on it just for this specific topic, but traditionally it's not where a topic of interest lies. But it looks like well over half of the current SAP installs, and even more if you go into the more complicated higher-end SAP installs, have Oracle as a backend, and SAP looks to be trying to change that. So if Oracle would be able to scoop up MySQL, it could severely impact SAP's future plans, depending on what those plans are. Now, I for one am glad to see that MySQL is not laying down at all on this one. They recently finally did announce an acquisition, and that was the acquisition of Netfrastructure, which includes Jim Starkey, who will now be working on MySQL full-time. And Jim is the father of Interbase, which many of you will know as Firebird, which it was forked into later. And he's just extremely well-known and well-respected in the database world. And I believe he was the one that actually came up with the blob originally. Now, he's been working on Netfrastructure for about 6 years from what it looks like, and some of the things that they've been doing there look extremely interesting. So one has to presume that his first task, and this is probably fairly obvious, will be leading the development of an in-house transactional backend for MySQL. And that would be with SleepyCat and Innobase both being Oracle properties now. And those were the two transactional backends, or at least two most common transactional backends. So you know they're going to have to do their own. But long term, I think he'll benefit the company far, far beyond just that. While MySQL now has the benefit of learning from the limitations of the multiple transactional backends that they've seen implemented in the past, and they have a highly skilled leader at developer for the project, one still has the wonder if they can successfully pull off the migration from InnoDB and to a lesser extent BDB to whatever they decide to implement. Now, this isn't just from a technical perspective, but it's also from a perception, as they put just a ton of hype into InnoDB with the release of 5.0. Once you push something and in effect put it on a pedestal like that, to switch as soon as MySQL is going to have to switch if they move to their own could have more of a perceptive, non-technical impact, but a bad impact nonetheless. For those of you not familiar with Jim, there's an interesting article, which is an interview over at innerbase-world.com, so do check that out. And I know Jim's departure from Firebird Project as a result of this acquisition will surely be missed. The second topic I have is OSDL, say it ain't so. We all know how silly some of the quote-unquote get-the-facts benchmarks and reports that came out of Microsoft were. But when I saw the commentary on the Linux TCO study that was recently co-sponsored by OSDL in addition to Levanta, I figured it was just the anti-Linux Rob Enderle that we've all grown accustomed to. And for those of you not familiar with Rob Enderle, a quick Googling should explain quite a bit. Then I read the report. And let me start out by saying that there are some very accurate depictions in this report. And I really do think that a report like this is something that we need very badly. But some of the claims and numbers in this thing are it's really just so unbelievable that I'm almost surprised OSDL put their name on it. And I hope we haven't stooped to this level, especially after calling Microsoft out on it like we did, and like we did correctly so. While the commentary by Rob is also full of holes and is greatly, greatly exaggerated, which you would expect, the fact that we gave him any fodder with this report is really just a bit disappointing to me. Now, hopefully I'm missing something, and that very well could be the case. I didn't end-to-end read the whole article, although I did read a fair amount of it. I pulled out just a few comments from it that made me a little skeptical. First, the report starts off comparing itself to older Microsoft studies. I think a report like this, or a study like this, should have merit on its own. So bringing older studies into this really aren't pertinent, in my opinion. The relationship with older Microsoft studies are tangential at best and makes the report seem biased right from the get-go. Now, to be fair, this is more of a personal gripe than really a legitimate gripe, but it just, to me, started the whole report off on the wrong foot. Next, here's a quote from within the report itself. A large hosting site reported 100% availability across 230 managed servers since October in 2001, end quote. Now, October 2001 is almost 5 full years ago, so the fact that you could report 100% availability across 230 servers, while I guess it's possible, it seems highly, highly unlikely. That means you didn't have a single reboot, which means you haven't upgraded the kernel in 5 years. No hardware failures, not a power supply issue, not a loss of power, no system updates, no user error, which is probably, at this point with Linux, your biggest chance, aside from hardware failure, just nothing in 5 years. It seems like either that 100% is highly anecdotal and includes like, oh, we didn't count this, or this, which wasn't stated, or the number is just completely exaggerated, which is something for, I think, obvious reasons you don't want in a study like this. The next thing that I found a little bit odd is they seem to knock Windows for, quote, requiring twice the memory, end quote, of the Linux distributions that they covered. But if you dig into the numbers, the number that they gave is 256 megs. Now, if you're really purchasing production servers that have 256 megs, you have much bigger problems on your hand. Just to poke around for Linux stuff, my vendor of choice for a while now has been Penguin Computing. They don't seem to even have a box on the very low end that goes below a gig. So the 256 meg thing seems a bit non sequitur to me. Next, when comparing prices, they use the Apache JBoss stack on the Linux side, which is a J2EE compliant solution. But then, for some reason, which I don't understand, and this is where I might be missing something, is that they choose the Microsoft ISA server, or ISA server, for the web server on the Microsoft side. The biggest problem with that is that ISA is not a web server at all, and that's an almost $24,000 mistake. That the price they quoted for the Enterprise ISA server was $23,996, which is about half the price of the entire solution on the Microsoft side. But more importantly, it shows you that there's a complete and fundamental misunderstanding of the platform, which is something that invalidates the study, potentially, in my opinion. And I think this is the biggest blow to the report. Why they chose ISA server and then compared it with Apache is completely beyond me. But you're definitely comparing apples and oranges at that point. Also on the pricing note, they compare Red Hat Enterprise 4AS, which is a one-year subscription-based product, and it's to a product that includes absolutely top-level 24x7, 365, very, very good support, with a purchased version, which is an owned license of Windows 2003, that would include per-incident support. So you're really, besides comparing two different OSs, you're not comparing similar installs of those two OSs. To pit AS against Windows 2003 really isn't doing the pricing justice, because the support at AS is just phenomenal. Now, to be fair on that last one, there is a small disclaimer about the pricing, but it really doesn't give someone without a full understanding of the two products any indication of what these numbers mean, and it really means the numbers are useless in the end. So they really should have just used numbers that were fair to both sides, which, while difficult, is certainly possible to do a better job, I think, than what they've done. Now, I'll stop there with the five examples, but you probably get the idea. So while the report legitimately contains a ton of highly relevant, highly accurate data, the fact that it's marred by those inaccuracies means that the validity of the whole thing can now be called into question by people like Enderle, and that really is a shame. This report could have been so, so much more. It could have been proof that we do things right in the open source world, and it could have been used as just a shining example of why Linux really is better. Hopefully we'll learn from the mistakes of this kind of, this is one of the first official white papers like this I've seen from the Linux side, so hopefully we can learn from this and do the next one right. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening. And remember, if you like the LQ podcast, please head over to podcastalley.com and vote for us.